Welcome to the Marshall Pruitt Podcast, presented by Cooper Tires. And also this month, we have support from my friends at Bell Racing Helmets USA. And courtesy of Bell Helmets, we had a little sit-down to start off the proper month of May here with practice, set to go on Tuesday at Indianapolis Motor Speedway with the greatest of all time, Mario Andretti. A dear friend, someone that, if you know motor racing, you know Mario Andretti. You know what a truly invaluable member of the racing community Mario continues to be decades after he retired. And our friends at Bell said, hey, you know what? He's been a really important part of our history. How cool would it be to sit down and talk about Mario's connection that goes back longer than I've been alive with Bell Racing Helmets? So, as someone who you probably know covers all the technical side, really into the engineering and technology of IndyCar racing and motor racing in general, that's all due to my background as a mechanic and engineer and whatnot. Well, you know, we might not think of helmets as part of technology, but indeed, this is something where Mario graced us with a lot of information about from his first days of starting with an old school leather helmet. I mean, truly just a, I don't even know if I want to call it a helmet. But then moving on to the open face and being one of the first to migrate to Bell's closed face helmets in the late 1960s. And just a lot of great stories with Mario in there and his 1969 Indy 500 winning helmet. Very iconic, open faced, using a scarf that is one of Bell's true holy grail helmet. So we spoke about that, and there's a funny story in there about someone who was convinced that they had the original, and Mario had a little bit of news for them. And anyways, there's some other gems in here that I hope you enjoy. You know, anytime we're talking to Mario Andretti, you know that there's going to be some good storytelling involved. And if you're in town this month, be sure to stop by Bell's new location on Main Street in Speedway, Indiana. It's right down the road from IMS. You know that they are synonymous with safety, innovation, performance, and engineering excellence. They have been trusted by more champion drivers than any other brand. 19 of the 35 entrants for this year's Indy 500 are Bell athletes, more than half, so fairly impressive there. So if you get a chance, stop in the new Bell store on Main Street. They have not just helmets, they have a pretty cool merchandise going on as well, from t-shirts to other items. So stop by, check it out. You know you can get every episode of the Marshall Pruitt Podcast on iTunes, on Podbean. We also post everything to our Marshall Pruitt Podcast Facebook page. We've been putting these podcasts on our Marshall Pruitt YouTube page as well. And I would also suggest that if you do venture over to the YouTube side, please subscribe, because we're putting up more content there. Some documentary-style stuff between myself and my filmmaker partner and friend, Travis Long. So we're trying to grow this thing, trying to give you guys more, whether it is sound, whether it is vision. It's a busy time, but thankfully we have great folks like Bell Racing Helmets USA and also my season-long primary sponsor, Cooper Tires, that helps me to bring this podcast to you. All right, off we go with the great Mario Andretti talking about his long career with Bell Racing Helmets and some pretty cool steps of evolution that he's been a part of along the way. So, Mr. Andretti, you've had a lot of associations with a variety of companies throughout the year, auto manufacturers, engineers, you name it. I think we might think of Mario Andretti and Lotus, Mario and so many things. Bell Helmets is in there, though, right? There's been a long association.
Yeah, no question. Obviously, we all know how vital a helmet is to a racing car driver. And it's quite honestly, you know, I didn't have many choices until you reach a certain level. And then, you know, even Bell would start paying attention to you. But ever since I broke into the ranks of, you know, the Champ Cars back in 64, I remember I've had, you know, a Bell helmet. And I, throughout my career, you know, I basically between 64 and 2000, maybe 99.5% 99% of the time I was wearing Bell helmets, and I do that today, as you know. So I've gone through all the developments, and you know, from my open face to full face, which was always that was probably the most interesting evolution, and getting used to type of thing. And I remember Dan Gurney was, I think he was the pioneer in that area. And I had to wait for just a little bit, you know. Fortunately, I took advantage of some more development, because when he first started, the shield was just, could not flip, you know.
Oh, wouldn't open.
So it wouldn't open. So there were a lot of, you know, as you can imagine, issues, you know, the heat factor and the fogging and all of that sort of thing. So he did all that for us.
I like that you let the Big Eagle do the development.
Yeah, he did the development. Yeah. And so it looks like, you know, 1970 is the time then I switched over.
Wow.
You know, to Bell. And it's been from 1970 to 2000, you know, basically 30 years.
That's I was born in 1970, so that's okay, boy, well, that's it's been quite some time. Let's maybe go back to the beginning of you and your brother Aldo. What kind of, I don't want to just say helmet technology, but head protection were you using back in the day? Dirt tracks, the little, you know, home-built cars and such you were racing. I have to imagine, you know, I don't want to say it was an afterthought, but it certainly wasn't something that is such a big part of our life like it is today.
Well, but you had to have a helmet.
Of course.
You know, and with Aldo and I, at the very beginning, the first season, we had one helmet, two drivers, one car, two drivers, and we had to share everything. And that was nothing different, because as twins with Aldo, always had to share. And we never had two of anything, you know. And fortunately, we didn't have to share the woman that we married, you know. But that's when it started being more, you know, of a personal thing. But, you know, going back to the helmet, you know, it was, I think it was a Cromwell helmet. It was you know, leather type of thing, you know, like something close like they used to have with the horse racing,
yeah.
I guess. And that was the, you know, the thing in vogue at the time. And I don't even remember how we got that. Well, obviously, we paid for it somewhere. But
that would have been state of the art, right?
Well,
a leather helmet at that time?
Pretty much it was. You know, it was probably as good as you could get. And here again, you know, Aldo had the accident that he had at the very last race of the season. You know, he had a base of the skull fracture, you know, so that helmet obviously didn't do the job. But that's what it was, you know. And so from there, I just, like I said, I'm looking at, I know I had some Bell helmets even when I was running midgets, because I had, so it was some Bell, and then I forget what the other brand was. There was another brand that was popular as well, where, you know, IndyCar drivers, and it was a kind of a mix back and forth. But again, once I reached a Champ Car level, I pretty much stayed with Bell. And there were like 2 years in Formula One when I was with Alfa Romeo. I had Nava helmets, and then 1 year I had Simpson, but after that it was, and I've been approached with you know, helmet manufacturers, Rye and so on and so forth. But I've always had just so much faith in Bell, because they continuously, you know, everybody obviously improved the product, and you know, I was, you know, with, because of the testing that I was very familiar with, and of course the people, the human side involved with Bell, I always felt like I had a good home there. And as you can see, my family of race drivers on both sides, my my brother's side, Aldo's side, and my side, they all obviously have benefited, you know, from the product from Bell, and they Bell has been fantastic to us. But I always look for the latest and greatest, you know, and everything, and I think we get it there, you know. It's like anything, safety has to be a work in progress. Mm. You know, you never reach the optimum level and say, okay, now we got everything that we need. And that's Bell's position always, you know, by learning from potential situations, and but always looking for, you know, the ultimate comfort, you know, with something that obviously will protect you to the maximum as well. And, you know, it's been a lot of the shield factor, you know, just the penetration that that we had, you know, about 15, 20 years ago. But today, you know, you'd be safe all the way. And the fogging and the comfort of ventilation and the aerodynamic side, you know, between the super speedway and the road course. Again, you know, it's a helmet that's very diversified. You know, I don't know if any other manufacturer has. I'm not familiar, but if they have all of these types of helmet that obviously would be more, you know, suitable for the type of racing, whether it's, you know, like I said, with Bell, because of the diversity of IndyCar, you know, they obviously cater to that, you know, very, very well. So,
and that's one thing that I've seen, having worked in IndyCar for a couple decades, is there are obviously multiple helmet manufacturers that get used, and there are often support techs on site, yeah. Maybe not at all the races, but the one thing that I guess I've had an appreciation of Bell long before, you know, for many, many years, mm-hmm. I think is to your point of customization. We're going here. We're going to want this wicker. We're going to want this strip. We're going to want whatever it is. There just seems to be you almost want to call them your helmet mechanics, because that's almost the role that they play.
Yeah, and then the other thing, too, I think as far as the ventilation and everything that you want, it's a personal thing. Certain drivers, you know, like this and that, and they have movable pieces, aerodynamic pieces and so forth that you can use as well and test with. So, again, I think these are all things that obviously, you know, you're looking for. You're looking for the maximum comfort, you know, like if your helmet lifts based on the cockpit configuration or whatever.
Yeah.
You know, you got a wicker, and in the wicker you can position at different places. I mean, I've done quite a bit of experimenting myself in a two-seater car even, you know, and sometimes I get all, you know, the stick cameras out there, you know, and I get all sorts of buffeting because of that. And I'm able to cure it, you know, in my own way. So
I love that you're still tuning your helmet for perfection in the two-seater,
yeah,
even,
absolutely.
Mario.
Yeah, sure.
That's awesome. So your relationship with them dates back to the 60s. Let's talk a little bit more about that interesting era of open face moving into the closed face helmet. We'll get to the iconic open face helmet and the scarf and such. Marco obviously did a tribute helmet not too long ago to honor that. But let's talk about that transition, because I have to imagine that coming up in motor racing in an era where open face was just the norm, you're used to the pressure of the air, dirt, grit, you've got goggles obviously, but what was either the driving adjustment, mental adjustment, was there a process to go through of like, I've been used to more than 10 years of this feeling and sensation on my face from open air, now I'm having to adjust to that being gone. Was that a thing to get comfortable with?
Well, pretty much everything that you just mentioned was a factor. And a lot of it, the biggest factor, however, I think was the weight.
Mm.
Because, you know, you have to imagine that, you know, a full face at the beginning was quite a bit heavier than normal. And I had to try to figure out about a head restraint, you know, the neck restraint. And I was fortunate that somehow I always had good strength in my neck. And a lot of guys used to have to strap it down and everything. And I was one of the last ones to really do that, you know, in that respect. But, you know, all these are all factors. And that's the beauty about Bell, that they always try to, you know, not give up anything as far as the safety aspect, you know, through their the Snell testing. But they always went with the lightest material until, you know, I got to the carbon materials, and they always were mindful of that.
Mm.
But it took a process, took a while, like anything else, you know, like the development of the race car. You know, it was all almost every year you were looking for something better, something that was more comfortable, and there were a lot of factors about air leakage and so on and so forth with the shields. And again, you know, it was a normal process, and something it's so important to have comfort level.
Oh, completely.
Because if something is awry, you know, with the helmet, it takes away from the concentration. It should be something that's as a matter of fact.
Yeah.
You know, and
if you're having to think about your helmet while going 200 miles an hour, you have problems.
The issue, yeah. But there were times when, you know, we went through that because of the huge change. And as you mentioned, the biggest change, of course, was, you know, going from open. But then at the same time, all of a sudden, oh, well, I think I'm going to have teeth at the end of the day now, you know, because I had cracked teeth a few times on the dirt tracks, you know, and that, I mean, it's 1 year. I think in '64, I had a cracked tooth in Reading and one at the Hoosier 100, the same time, same year. And there was one of those things, you know, we were not protected very well in that respect.
We know why your dentist has been mad. You moved to the closed face helmet. He's not getting the business he once did.
Yeah, that's right. But we were always looking forward to the next improvement and so forth. And the other thing that's interesting, they were always looking for input and taking it very seriously because, you know, different drivers had different ideas and then tried to mash it all in, you know, to try to combine, you know, the input. And they always took, I know, very seriously. And in general, we all benefited ultimately, you know, but...
That sounds no different than a race team.
Yeah, it's, you know, they, exactly. I mean, it's all about improving the breed, you know, and again, I know how important it is to just have good fit, good everything, you know, how nice that is, because otherwise, oh, no, this and that, you know, you don't want any of that. They can always accommodate you, you know, they always can do some little tweaks or something. And accommodate you. I know that I get a new helmet, you know, all the time, sometime, you know, during the year and whatever. I don't have to worry about it. They know exactly my nuances, and I put it on. It's like, you know, I've been wearing it, you know, forever. So
wow.
That's how Bell operates. You know, they're fabulous in that respect.
Let's talk about a couple of iconic Mario Andretti helmets. We've already kind of cracked the door open on one. You rolling into Victory Lane here in Indianapolis. We're sitting in the Bell Racing Helmet garage right now. But rolling into Victory Lane here, that helmet of yours, I know the folks at Bell say there's really two or three helmets they consider in the pantheon that helmet that you wore, Dan Gurney, his first open face helmet, and there's one other one as well. But do you have an appreciation for the fact that, again, that helmet of yours, that scarf, I mean, this is photographic perfection. I mean, it's classic.
Well, yeah, I have it. I still have that helmet. Oh. And what's interesting is that just this year, we were approached by a gentleman here in Indianapolis who said that who claimed to have my race-worn 1969 race-worn winning helmet, and of course, and he said that he bought it at an auction, and for $250, it was and that was the claim that was my race-worn helmet. Well, it looked very similar, which is one of the helmets that I actually wore during the season. But it was really interesting. I had to burst his bubble a little bit.
He went downstairs and said, it's right here.
I said, unfortunately, I have to tell you, it's a helmet that I wore probably some dirt races, and for part of the season. But I have the winning helmet myself. But he was very nice, and he was happy that I was able to sign it and so forth. But as you can see, in those days, we didn't change helmets, you know, three or four times during the season.
Like we do
now. Usually I ran some season, I ran with the same helmet, you know, most of the season. So that's the way it was. You know, but in 68, 69, this might have been 68, part of 68, and 69, you know, usually toward Indianapolis, you always try to go with a fresh,
of course,
you know, fresher helmet and so forth. And I think that one I wore for the rest of the season. So the one that this gentleman had, Frederick is his name, probably wore all through 60, because I was pretty beat up. But I can always tell the markings and everything, you know. So the one that I wore had, you know, the Firestone flags on the peak there. And, it's the way it represented exactly. I mean, it's the one that it's the real one, I should say, you know. So there's no question about it. I always had that. And as you say, it was just probably the end of the era of the open face, pretty much. Big step forward, you know, just almost like going from front engine cars to rear engine cars.
Wow.
It was that big a step. And from a safety standpoint, I mean, it was huge, huge, huge. Looking at even the padding, the shell and the padding that I had there, like versus, you know, not even just today, you cannot even begin to compare, but versus just 5-10 years later, wow, huge, huge improvement, you know. So it's amazing what, you know, how exposed we were, you know, in those decades.
What's fascinating for me, Mario, is looking back through photos of here at the Speedway, and I think you raise a great point of you can look at someone posing for a qualifying photo in the 1930s, and you look at what they are, you could kind of call it head protection, but maybe not really.
Wind protection.
Yeah, exactly. Keep the hair nice.
Keep the hair nice.
But to your point, you move along that timeline of 40s, 50s, 60s, you see the cars evolving, but then you also see the helmets evolving as well. Let's move to another classic helmet of yours while we're talking anniversaries. 40-year anniversary of your Formula One World Championship, the gorgeous Lotus 79. That helmet as well. I know I spent plenty of time as a kid just marveling at that car, but helmet also just seemed to look perfect, fit perfect in the overall shape of that car. Does that helmet also hold any special memories for you, either from a technology standpoint or just that year?
Well, I think pretty much all of it. I mean, the helmet is a device, you know, just essential, most essential device in a period where you had degree of success, you know, become something very special because of that. And nothing better than seeing that that helmet, seeing several checker flags first.
Yes.
You know, and in different, and I mean, you know, not just different countries, but, you know, different continents. You know, the Bell helmet that was in my head has won in 5 continents and has been on podium in 6 continents. So it's traveled with me.
Yes,
plenty.
Absolutely. Well, we're going to Antarctica. We need to find a race for you in Antarctica. We're going to add a couple more little...
Antarctica, yeah. That's the only one we didn't go to.
Well, let's close on a couple of other quick topics, Mario. And again, I appreciate your time. It's just, you know, I think for some folks, they might think of IndyCar racing, racing in general, as either cars, drivers, but either a technical machine or a human, but maybe don't always understand that, you know, as you continue to illustrate, there's so many other tools of your trade, like a helmet, your safety equipment, that is just as vital, just as important as anything else, a motor, a wheel, or a tire. One thing that I know, it isn't so much of an issue in today's motor racing, but I know that it was in coming up for you, fire, cockpit fire, refueling fire. I know the addition of Nomex fire retardant helmet liners and such had to have helped at some point in your career where things could have gone really badly without it.
Yeah, I mean, exactly. I experienced some facial burns in 69 when I still had the open face, which was said if I would have had a closed face, you know, I would have been just fine, you know. So that's a perfect example. And that's one thing we didn't touch on. But, you know, as we obviously gain more protection through Nomex, the materials, you know, that obviously protected us from fire, you know, and the rest of the body, Bell helmet reacted immediately and giving us, you know, the fire protection, you know, fire retardant materials inside the helmet, you know, because, you know, there were several of the decades, you know, 60s, 70s, especially, where, you know, we lost drivers that didn't have a broken bone, you know, through fires. And, you know, Bell just did their part in maximizing that protection ultimately. And unfortunately, a lot of what you learn is from after a tragedy, you know, but the important thing is, you learn something and you react to it. And that's what we always felt that Bell was right at the leading edge of that, you know, right ready to react properly and vigorously, you know. So, again, you know, we can go through, you know, different decades as to what took place. But I think... you know, Bell was always ahead of the curve in many, many ways, quite honestly.
Let's close on an area that I'm positive you enjoyed. If we look back to the 80s, but I think maybe more specifically the 90s, the final years of your full-time career, we had rocket-fast cars, 230 miles an hour with ease here at the Speedway. We also had drivers' heads and helmets somewhat exposed, fairly exposed in the airstream, and at these super speedways, aerodynamics became part of the game because with your helmet in the airstream, obviously you're not wanting to lose any mile an hour or two because of your helmet. Was that something that you enjoyed either helping with the feedback in or the development on, knowing that all of a sudden wasn't just about safety? That helmet that you wore, that Bell helmet, could actually be a performance advantage.
Well, obviously, that's when a lot of the shapes, you know, there were the changing different shapes and so forth. And again, it was, you know, it was a period where there were a lot of questions, you know, how to deal with it. You know, because, you know, right now, basically, you're exposed from halfway up, you know, and but you get some turbulence down there. And then so there are other factors. And that's what that's when they started doing some wind tunnel testing. For sure, yeah. You know, with to get some ideas to what's really going on. And a lot of it was leakage, you know, through the shield and so forth, because you were so exposed and there was so much turbulence, and to be able to understand that. So, I mean, it's, again, total work in progress, quite honestly. And but you always learn something. You learn something, and you always had... we had better cars from year to year, and we had better helmets at the same time.
Well, I appreciate the fact that just as you've been a partner with Firestone for so long, mm-hmm. You've had choices, as you mentioned. You know, there are plenty of people who came to you and
choices.
Said, we'd like you to use our product, our helmet. There's probably some financial offerings in there as well.
Yeah.
I appreciate the fact that rather than listen to someone's marketing pitch, you let the quality of the product do the talking.
Yeah, something that's as vital as what we're talking about. You know, you just you put that value in first, in that it's not a commercial or financial value, you know, that's all important at that point. You know, so that's the way I always looked at it.
Thank you, my friend.
My pleasure.
And that was Mario Andretti sitting down with me in the Bell Garage inside Gasoline Alley last week. And we're going to have some more fun things we're going to do this month. We're going to continue doing our Day at Indy podcast, the short form end of day pieces. Every time an IndyCar is on track, we're going to be doing something at the end of the day, talking about it with whether it's a driver, team manager, engineer, personality, might be myself and my racer colleague, Robin Miller. This is all, again, being presented to you by Bell Racing Helmets and Cooper Tires. Then we're going to do something here coming up. We're still working out the details. Not trying to tease you here, just trying to share that while we don't have the exact method in place, we know that as we get closer to the 102nd Indy 500, we're going to do a roundtable podcast recording with a number of Bell athletes, and so I'm told that could be a kind of sort of public thing. So just waiting to hear back from our friends at Bell Racing Helmets as to where it's going to be, when it's going to be, and hopefully if you are in town, in or around Speedway, Indiana, come join in, heckle us, ask questions, have some fun, because admittedly that's about all we're trying to do here with this podcast. Have some fun. Maybe you might learn something if you're not careful. All right, I'm Marshall Pruitt. This is Marshall Pruitt Podcast. Thank you for listening.